This is the Moving Iron Podcast, the only podcast for ag equipment dealers by ag equipment dealers.
All right, welcome to Moving Iron Podcast number 7. On this episode, I'm going to discuss the equipment markets with Dusty Scholes of Butler Machinery. We're going to talk about the used equipment market, the drought situation in the Dakotas, and what we see happening in the new market as well as what we're going to see happen at the end of 2017. Dusty, welcome to my podcast.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Awesome, man. So before we get started, I always like to get people's backgrounds about who they are and what and the companies they work for and all that kind of stuff. So give me a little background on Dusty and Butler Machinery.
So Dusty Scholes work with Butler Machinery Company. We're the Caterpillar dealer in North Dakota and South Dakota. And then we're the AGCO dealer in North Dakota, South Dakota, and Nebraska. So we cover all three states on the ag side, more or less, handling Rogator, Terragator on the application side, and then all the Challenger tractors, white planters, and hay equipment that AGCO has to offer. So those are the things that we do. I've been in the industry for about 15 years now. Started out with Butler Machinery in 2003 in our finance department and moved into ag sales after that, and did that for about 5 years. And after that period of time, I went over to work for Ziegler Cat and was operations manager of the Fergus Falls store there for 4 years and came back to work for Butler in 2011 now. And yeah, that breaks up about 15 years of doing a lot of different things for the companies and learning a lot about the heavy and the ag industries pertaining to both. So it's been a busy life so far.
Right. Yeah, that's a dynamic marketplace, and you have so many different things going on with the way that the Caterpillar and Challenger groups kind of work together and the products they carry. So it is a dynamic market for you guys. So right now you guys are having a somewhat of a drought situation in the Dakotas. It sounds like there's been some rain that's moved through the area and kind of maybe saved some, but it might have been too late for others. So how's that affecting business, and what do you see happening going through the spring wheat harvest?
Well, the spring wheat's been hurt a little bit in South Dakota from it. In South Dakota, their drought situation isn't as bad as what we have in North Dakota right now. Western North Dakota, Central North Dakota is still considered in a pretty severe to moderate drought. We did have rain this week, in some cases an inch and a half or better in areas, but even that rain didn't get us moved out of the category of drought based upon our rainfall year to date. So the rains will help for sure, and that'll spur some growth in the hay fields as well as the pasture fields. And then the crops up in the Dakotas, like the beans and the corn, that'll give them a nice little jump here for a little bit. But for all intents and purposes, we're still considered in a drought, I guess, for that matter. But yeah, it is going to impact some business here as far as demand for some of the used products that we're selling and some new ones as well. Kind of remains to be seen how bad it will be, because it really depends how bad it gets. But there has been some demand here yet as of late. But with that drought hanging, yeah, that demand could wane fairly quick.
Yeah. Yeah, drought is it's a hard thing to overcome. Man, once they get to a certain stage, it doesn't, even if it does bounce back, it hurts yields and all the stuff that comes with that, you know. So it's just
everyone's attitude gets a little bit rougher. You know, it's not fun looking at the dust blowing, the crops sitting there, and it's understandable. It's not that it's unwarranted to get a little bit down in the mouth, but it is what it is. I mean, it's not fun. It happens every so often, but we work through it and we get past it.
Yep. So with the drought coming, has the cattle market shown any signs of a bit of a rebound because of it, and or any kind of fluctuation in the marketplace, and is the hay market kind of reflecting that as well?
Well, the cattle markets, I had heard here a couple weeks ago, there was a fair amount of people that were actually selling off cow-calf pairs because they were concerned there wasn't going to be enough pasture grass to feed them. So with that happening, you had a little bit of a sell-off, which drove the price down a little bit. But you know how cyclical the cattle market is. When you sell those off, now you fast forward, there's not as many to sell in the future. Mm-hmm. So that can be the rebound then when that comes around. But the cattle markets did soften a bit. I would tell you that, in my opinion, the hay market this fall and into winter is going to be hot up here, because there's a limited supply with the hay and the drought that's coming, and people are going to have cattle to feed, and it's a supply and demand thing. There's going to be a hot hay market, I would say, this fall and winter.
Yeah, that we had the same situation down here. We had a severe drought, and who had hay, they were selling it for very high premium, and the drought will drive that up. So
Let's
talk about local markets. So down here in Kansas where I'm at, we've got, seems like we have some local auctions that have been happening lately, retirement sales and those kind of things. Has the local market or local auction affected your marketplace, and is that affecting how your customers are looking at buying equipment, or has it really been a non-factor for you?
Oh, it definitely has been there. I would tell you that what really has driven our market south isn't so much the retirement and the estate auctions as it is the large consignments and the online auctions. Because the retirement and estate auctions for us has actually brought a pretty good price to the equipment, because a lot of times it's the neighbors and people nearby bidding on that equipment that know it. And because they know the equipment, they know that the guy's either taking care of it, so they think it's a better price. So they'll bid it up. I mean, we've seen the retirement auctions that bring a pretty healthy price to them. Then you get to your online and your consignment auctions. That's been kind of the meat market where, you know, no one knows where it came from or what issues might be there, and they better get it cheap because they're not sure of what the story is with it. And that has been what has really impacted our demand and pricing structure, is more that market, because you'll get comments like, well, I can buy it for half that on auction. I saw an auction last week where it went for, you know, a third of that price or whatever it is. But, you know, you got to remember, whatever you're buying on auction, especially consignment auction, you know, there's not a lot of history to what happened to it or where it's been or why it's on the auction. So it should go cheap.
Right.
There's not, maybe there's not some, maybe, and there's no guarantee behind the sale either. It's just, it's as is, where is the auction gavel jops, and by God, you own something now, and you take it home and it falls apart and there's no recourse to anyone. So it should be cheap on the auction, but we do get those comments about how, yeah, we can buy it on auction for half or third. And, you know, and there's just been so much more of it lately. I think that even some better than average pieces have ended up on auction, which has driven more people to have a little more comfort. You know what I'm saying, with some of those things. So yeah, there's no doubt it's impacted us. We try our best to limit how many things we send to auction, just because, you know, we got, I forget the number of salespeople, but quite a few salespeople out in the territory that are working to sell machines for us that we pay. So why should we go hire another group like an auction company and pay them to sell it as well, when we got plenty of guys of our own to do it? So we try to be pretty sparingly with the auction.
Yeah, and we have the same focus too. I mean, we have guys that are, you know, we try to work that system and keep that inventory in our area as much as we can, so we can maximize the parts and service business. So how has the auction market changed your value proposition when you start talking to customers?
Well, it all comes down to, you know, you're buying it from a dealer for a reason, which means, you know, we stand behind, especially our products. If there are products that we sell, you know, we're going to stand behind them and be there for you, you know, and offer trade-ins down the road. And we're a one-stop shop. We got parts and service. You know, we'll do trade evaluations. We'll trade machines in from you. We'll support you. So you really got to upsell your dealership in order to overcome this auction price gap. And the most important things to me is the whole house that we offer, right? First, and secondly would be the fact that, hey, it might be as is where it is, but if you have major issues 2-3 days after delivery and purchase from us, you know, we're not gonna ignore you. We're gonna talk to you and try and work through it with you, and that may mean that we participate in some things where you're not gonna get that from the auction.
Right. Yeah, the auction doesn't take trades, and they don't want to help you on the back end of something where to go wrong. That's for sure.
It's a heck of a deal, really, when you think about it. You know, you're a lot of machines that go on auction that are already losers for the dealership, right? But the auction company never loses. They make 10% on it, whether it's a winner for you or a loser for you. It's, you know, the past 2-3 years have been a boon for the companies like Richie's and these other companies that are having. There's more auctions than there has been as people try to dump equipment, but boy, it's been a rainmaker for them. You know, they've been having unlimited supply of equipment coming through, and they're making whatever commission is on everything they sell, you know. So yeah, I mean, and that all is cyclical too, as the amount of used equipment out in the marketplace dries up, you know, all of a sudden there's not as much equipment going to auction, and whatever is on auction might bring more money because it's just not as available as it was. It's just a period of time we gotta get through and find the end of it, and things will change, you know, in 2-3 years. I don't know how long it is, but I'm guessing it'll be a little while yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. And to your point, I think this is the year if you were to take something to auction that is a later model piece, 2015 or newer, where manufacturers just didn't generate as many new ones coming off the assembly
Yep.
line, that this could be a year to take something and make some and make something work at the auction that wouldn't have worked in the past.
That's right.
Especially if it's a good solid late low late late hour late model low hour piece, you know what I mean? So
No doubt. Yep, for sure.
this could definitely be a a year to roll the dice and maybe come out on top of some of that stuff. Especially if it's a if it's an on-farm auction, I think that could be a great opportunity for some guys.
No doubt. Yeah, that
Yeah.
on-farm auction seems to do better from our perspective.
Absolutely. Yeah, it makes a world of difference. Makes a world of difference. So as you see, we've talked about the about how the local auction market is affecting your area. What do you see some as some of your short-term and long-term struggles, opportunities going through the end of 17?
As far as equipment product lines or just in general?
Oh, I think, I mean, from equipment perspective, and then also I'd love to hear what you have for just in general. That'd be great too.
I would tell you that, combines, there's a lot of combines in inventory and both out in the field for sale. So combines are going to be a little bit of a struggle here for a little bit yet. Corn heads are going to be tough for not for a lot of people. I mean, there is so many corn heads on the market. A lot of late model stuff and a lot of carryover new inventory in people's yards too yet as far as dealers go. So there's a lot of corn heads available for sale, and that's going to be a tough one for a bit. Yeah, those are the things that we were probably most got our eyes on and trying to do better at and make some headway on.
No. What do you see as far as equipment wise that you have some opportunities in?
Big horsepower tillage tractors were pretty popular this spring. Obviously the cyclical things like the hay market was just warm for a little bit here because it's hay season. I imagine combine season will get a little kicked into gear here in the next month and a half, 2 months, and we'll see some activity there. I don't know. The fall of the year here is going to be interesting because it seems like the guys that are planning ahead for tax purposes or whatever, usually the year before in the fourth quarter, they ended up buying whatever they needed. And that could be anything. It wasn't necessarily something that was going into season, it was just whatever their most urgent need was. So as you go through first quarter, the purchases seem to get more cyclical because it's not a needed purchase as far as a tax deal goes, so you don't have to pick and choose. But if you pull your air seeder out and you need a new one, it's going to roll then. So I mean, you get more of the seasonal items. Then you go into hay season, same deal, right? You get a spike in the hay demand. Now we're going into combine season. We'll see a spike in that here in the next 2 months. And then going into fall, I would say, maybe some fertilizer applicators, some tillage pieces, and potentially some more high horse tractors. And fourth quarter is a wild card, though. It can really be anything, I think. It all depends upon what the most urgent need is on the farm and if they have a tax liability to offset.
Yep, there's going to be a. I think this end of the year will be probably more dicey than we've seen in the past, just because of the current situation in the economy and the way things are
Yep.
shaping up. So it'll be what, like you said, what they need to have when they need to have it, and kind of move forward with that. So leasing equipment, something that we've talked about quite a bit on here, and I think it's a kind of a tool that we're using more now than we've probably used in the past. And our customers are more in tune to leasing equipment now than they've been in the past. Where do you how's leasing equipment affected your market and your business and your approach to the customer?
We've done leasing for a while. It has probably gotten a little more popular just because the cash flow is a little bit looser when you lease. It's not such a big payment. The downside stream effects of some of that is what we're living through now, where you got a lot of lease returns coming back in, potentially going to your vendor finance company, Deere Credit, or in our case, AGCO Finance, or different vendors that have leased this equipment. And frankly, they might end up having a lot of equipment sitting in there locked because it's all lease returns that the guys were feeling that was better just to walk away from the purchase option than trade it. And yeah, I mean, that's my biggest concern, I guess, is the pile of equipment that could be coming back off lease and how that's going to impact our marketplaces when, a Deere Credit or an AGCO Finance says, hey, all of a sudden we've got too much equipment that we own So let's throw it all to auction or something along those lines. And all of a sudden, then there goes a bunch of values because a bunch of it comes into the marketplace at once. That's more what I'm concerned. I think the farmers like it for the cash flow purpose. And we like doing leases too. I mean, they work well. But you do it to death in some cases. And then it all depends on how aggressive you got on your purchase options. And if you went deep on them to get a payment low, all of a sudden you get to the end of the term and the purchase option is too high for what the equipment's worth today. Banks getting it back. I mean, and all of a sudden now the bank owns something that they don't really want. That's the downside effect that our dealerships, I think, have got to be concerned about.
Yeah, we are. I had the same sense of caution that you have on that stuff. But I'm not going to stop going out and trying to lease equipment either, because just like you said,
No.
it's the cash flow thing that's driving guys to the paint to that machine now. Because, like I've said, it's not we're not really so much selling benefits and features of equipment anymore. We're really selling that payment,
Yep, and a lead for sure.
and a lease is the absolute cheapest way to operate and own or operate a piece of equipment. And but back to your point of, what happens when these manufacturers' finance arms decide that they have too much inventory, or Farm Credit or somebody like that decides they have too much stuff laying around, because none of those people want to be in the remarketing business,
No, they're not dealers. They
yeah.
want to do the paperwork. They don't want the equipment sitting in the lot.
Right. That's right. That's right. So that is concerning. And whatever happens with one of them, that one will affect the ripples across the entire marketplace of colors and of everything else. It'll affect everything. So,
There's no doubt. And and we talked about it here the other day on some things. If you have if we have 100 pieces that are coming off of lease and say all 100 of them are going to go back to the finance company or whatever, in some cases, some of those 100 machines don't need to be replaced, but a bulk of them, you can't be without them, the farmer. I mean, he needs something to do his operations, right? So he can't just turn it back and not add something back in. In most cases, there's probably a few cases where it was an extra machine that they can live without. But and those are the times where can it be released from the finance company? I think they've been working on some things with that on our end where they'll sign up for an additional 2 years and hopefully some of the problems aren't as bad as they are now, to push it down the road a ways. Or does the finance company say, hey, look, we know you're not going to take it back, but maybe we'll cut you a deal on the purchase option just to make you keep it type of thing, right? So we've seen some different creativity and it's worked out.
Yeah, and that's such a key point you just made there, is the creativity in payment structures is what's such a overwhelmingly big part of this business anymore. Like, we were talking another day, wanted a deal where we were using a 4.5 year lease instead of a 4 year lease, or a 4.5 year payment structure, where you were spreading that cost out a little bit and kind of stretching people to different places to where you could make that payment more attractive and more palatable for the people that are out there.
No doubt.
So let's take a look at some of the equipment that was coming up here. So like right now for us, we're looking at planters and sprayers and stuff like that. That's kind of the where we're at as far as ordering new equipment goes. So what's your outlook on planters right now? When you say up in your neck of the woods with the drought and stuff that you have and the situation that you're in, of course you're ordering planters now for next year, so that's kind of how that usually works. But how's that conversation been going with people that you deal with?
Planter market's been pretty weak past couple years. There's guys that look around and and consider some things, but it's still been weak. A lot of new stuff was bought, 3, 4, 5 years ago, and it's well built anymore, so it can last. And it seems like if you got a planter with Precision Plant on it, I mean, you can get another planter with Precision Plant or whatever you want on it. But you're going to end up with the same thing you have, but you're going to pay a lot more money for it because the used planter isn't worth as much because the market's pretty soft. And the new planter still is expecting a pretty high price. So the gap gets so big that I think they're waiting it out. I would tell you the planter market's been weak for us.
Yeah, and I think for us, I think that's going to be maybe an area where we have an opportunity to go and move a few. I think just because of the situation, there's not that many late model pieces
No,
to go out and sell in the used marketplace. So that gives us an opportunity to look at some of those trade-ins, generate our own used market, I guess, for lack of a
no
better
doubt,
term, you know,
yeah.
and put
If
that
a
out
new
there.
one's,
So we'll see
if
what
a new
happens.
one's 250 plus, and I got a 1 or 2 year old one, is that 180, and you can get it in and sell it at that? You know, I mean, that's $70,000-$80,000 in difference, and it might be the same exact planter, just a model year different, right?
Right. Yeah. So I think there's some opportunity there. I think to, cause we, like you said, like I said, there's no used marketplace right now for
yeah,
those, for
it's
those
pretty
planters.
weak.
Yeah. So kind of have to go out and generate our own, on our own inventory, I guess. Sprayer market. So the Rogator, Terra Gators you guys have up there, that's a pretty big marketplace for you guys, especially covering three states like you do, and as dynamic as each one of those states are from agriculture, one state's not the same compared to the other. So how's that marketplace shaping up for you, and what's that looking like now?
That's been a little better. You know, last year was a little soft, and this year is not as bad. But yeah, and again, it's the same situation that happened on the farmer side that's happening to the ag retailer side, which is the bulk where we do that business. So the ag retailers, like everyone, were making money pretty good over 2012, 13, and 14. And what happens when they make money? They update a bunch of equipment, which is great. We sell a bunch of things, and everyone gets upgraded into newer stuff, and life goes on, right? So again, we get into current times, and there's some things that need to be replaced that are being replaced, but there was a lot of new stuff purchased in that really doesn't have to be replaced as much or as soon as it does now. I will tell you that with retailers, different than farmers, I would say, is they're gonna apply the crop no matter what. If corn is $3, or if corn is $7, they're going to run across the field and put fertilizer on it. Doesn't matter. So in that regards, the equipment they run, it all wears out no matter the price of the crop. And a lot of times it needs to be updated, not so much a want, but a need, because it just wears itself out over time. And it's a business, not necessarily a farm. Farming's business as well, but it's run differently in my mind. So that market softened a bit, but I would tell you that there's going to come a time here in the future that they're going to have some things that are going to need to be replaced because they've worn them out or worn them down too far.
Yep, they will, irregardless of what the price of the crop is, they're going to plant something. Otherwise, they can't get any money at all. That's their job. That's what they do. So, yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's the spray market for us. You know, like we said, again, back to the used marketplace, there's not much late model stuff out there for guys to pick from. So, again, we're trying to generate that marketplace to give that, fill that demand, for what demand we have, for that machinery. So I feel like we're the same way, you know, we're a CAD dealer down here. So we have, a lot of our sprayer marketplace is to the ag service provider. And that's where a lot of those machines are going, and the ones that come out, then that's our used pool. So, overcoming the hours sometimes is an issue with the stuff that we have, but we also have guys that are looking for that later model stuff with the more technology and stuff that they can get into it at a better price point. And that really allows that for that. So, so high horsepower row crop tractors, that I would think in your neck of the woods, that would be a fairly popular machine just because of the, air seeders that you pull and plus
bigger planters. Yeah,
the bigger planters stuff in the corn and bean markets that you have. So how's that shaping up for you, and how's that market look?
That's been pretty soft as well, and I think there's a few reasons for that. Again, guys updated a bunch of stuff, so that they're sitting pretty well in the machines they have, and we've got some new products coming into the field here from all the different colors. And because of that, people want to hold off on buying new things to see what the newest thing is going to be. And we've sold a few of them. That market has been pretty soft for us. There's a lot of them out there. It's just the guys are deciding to either save the money or upgrade something else, it seems like.
Yeah. And that's what we're seeing too. Guys are looking to upgrade what they need to upgrade, based on, you know, I think when you look at machinery, there are certain points in time where reconditioning costs become a factor, and that's a factor point where they're going to start saying, is it worth me keeping this machine, making the payment, and doing the reconditioning that needs to be done to bring it back up to a workable level. And we're starting to see guys weigh that more than we've had in the past, kind of
Well,
falling back into their traditional trade cycles
yeah.
that they've had over compared to what they've had over the last, 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I would tell you too, again, and this is something that we see everywhere is, it was great selling as much equipment, especially the new stuff that we did for a period of time there where things really went crazy and got really warm. But the downside of that is, at some point there's a lot of new equipment in the field and there's not as much demand because everything's updated.
Right.
And I think we're living through some of that now too, which is great for the farmers. I'm glad for them that they went out and updated when they could, when it was financially able to be done, right? So they did manage to update some things and upgrade some things. And all of us sold a bunch of equipment during that time. But then we kind of fall off the cliff and slow down. Well, you can't expect it to go forever, I guess. At
Right.
some point, everyone's got what they need and it's new enough that they're okay with it, right?
Yeah, it seemed like we were on a 10-year run of every year's the best year ever, and sooner or later records can't be set for that long, that
No,
many
at
years in
some
a
point
row.
it's got to level
Yeah.
off, but it needs to.
Yeah, it
It certainly
absolutely
needs
needs to. Yeah, definitely needs to do that. So looking at your combine marketplace, how's for us, when we look at combines, I think we have a new combine coming out, a new series combine coming out, and just looking at, again, the used marketplace where there's not much used late model stuff to pick from. There's some opportunity again to generate that used marketplace. I'm a little concerned about the differences that we're going to have to draw to make sure that we have our machinery priced in a remark in a market that you can resell into, and not push someone up to the next to the new one just because of the price of the used one, and where you're at position wise. So,
Yep.
how do you see that market shaping up, and how's that working out in the areas that you cover?
That's the same thing that we fight as you go from a class 9 to a class 8 to a class 7 combine. When you got a guy that's got a class 9 but he wants to roll it every year, 2, 3 years, whatever. How do you get that thing priced so that the next buyer of that used piece is willing to take that instead of maybe a combine that fits his size better, right? Because that's what you see is you got a guy in the second tier buyer that a class 7 combine is probably the perfect size for him. Well, then I would tell you that the class 9 used one you have had better be less than that class 7 new one. Otherwise, there's no point for him to even consider it because he doesn't need the size. And he'd probably prefer to buy something that had warranty anyhow. So that's where, like you say, the differentiation in pricing based on the tier of customer that you're promoting to. And it makes it hard. I mean, it makes it hard for that guy that bought that thing new for a big number and he wants to roll it after 1 year, 1 or 2 or 3 years and your trade value is here because I know if I'm going to bring it in and expect to sell it, I've got to put that price here. So my trade value's got to be here to do that. Now that gap between what he got for trade and what he paid for it gets pretty big. And the market's driving that. I mean, in some cases, I think the customer base has got to be more open to the fact that you're not going to roll a combine for $100 an hour, probably not even two by $100 an hour. It just ain't going to happen. It's difficult.
Yeah, it is definitely and the problem is just the price of new equipment's gotten to the point where it's so high, and
Yep.
so the numbers are so big that when you start talking about 50 or 60,000 bucks, it really is an afterthought when you start looking at payments at the way some of the stuff is priced. So if you're sixty
No
even
doubt.
$1,000 back of the new one that you're selling, or even the first generation trade in on that second one, when you start talking 300, 400,000 bucks, that payment structure does not it really doesn't affect that much, and you're looking at $5,000 to $7,000 a year to move up. So, and a lot of people will say, well, it's worth me doing that because I'm going to get more technology, more warranty, whatever it is that you're going to get. So
No doubt.
it's definitely something we got to pay attention to, and something that I'm watching really close when I'm
And
looking at
we've
that.
all been burned on it already.
Yeah.
It's already too late,
I know, yeah. It's whatever decisions you make now, you don't know if you're right for 9 months. So that's always a struggle with this job. Definitely.
Yep.
So how does your your process work where you with the your salespeople? Do you evaluate the equipment that they look at on trade, or can you walk me through how that works?
So our used equipment department does all the evals for the company. The stores don't do them, so they go out, look at the machines, they survey them, get pictures, get serial numbers, no condition, submit that into us in our department, and we in turn look at them as they come in, and based on Iron Solutions book, based on what is available for sale in the marketplace, based upon what we have available for sale, and based upon what we've been able to sell some things for, we determine a trade value and an estimated sell price, and we send that back to the sales force and based on all that information.
Right. Yeah, that's how I look at it the same way. I do the evaluations for what comes to our sales staff, and then same way, balance against what the marketplace says, past sales history, what auction data is, you know, take all that stuff and try to come up with the value for what that machine's worth, and then try to make sure you're not overly wrong when you try to go long on something, you know what I mean? So
yeah. And the auction's nice. I guess the auctions for me has been more telling of if the auction values are moderate, it tells me that, you know, that product type probably isn't as bad as it seems. But if the auction prices are just horrendously low, then you know that there's something going on with the demand or the supply of that product. There's just either too much of it or there's not much demand for it, one of the two.
Right. Do you go to a lot of auctions? Do you try to get?
Yeah, we go to some. We use a lot of live auction, internet auction, auction time, things like that we use. We do attend some auctions too, and, you know, we'll watch some things and what they're selling, try to understand, you know, what the story is with it or why it went this price. And especially if it's a farmer or somebody that we know that auctions something of ours, we keep an eye on it and watch it and make sure, you know, of what it does.
Yeah. And that's why I watch as many auctions as I can and try to collect as much data as I can and make sure that I'm pretty knowledgeable about that. It's 'cause it has such a demand. Are such an effect on the way the retail market plays out after you take a look at all that. So,
no doubt.
So when you we kind of hit on this a little bit earlier, but 17 from an overall macro level, what are some of the positive factors you see that you're gonna come across going in through 17 into 2018? Like, what do you think are going to be some things that are going to be positive things for your business, and what are some positive, not necessarily equipment, but just as a whole, kind of stuff that you see as positives for the...
Well, one of the things you had mentioned earlier is one of the things that's on our mind, too, is the fact that production from the factories over the past 2 years has really dropped off. So because of that, that's impacting the supply of newer, later model equipment in the marketplace, lowering it. And you fast forward a year, two, 3 years past this period of time, and if that levels off, there'll be a shortage of late model used equipment. There'll be a shortage of late model new stuff. I mean, they're just not building as much, which is good. I mean, because that helps fix the problem, right? If there's a limited amount of buyers and you're still producing a million things, it's all worthless then, right?
Right.
But if there's a limited amount of buyers and you're only building what you need, now we're getting somewhere, you know what I'm saying, where I think everyone went so crazy and was running three shifts at every factory 24 hours a day for 365 days a year and setting records of number of machines they were producing. And yeah, as long as they're all sold, it's great. But then all of a sudden you got all this stuff out there, and it's just, some of it's in dealer lots, and what's it worth today when there's so many out there? You know, I think that's a positive, is the fact that the vendors have backed off on their production so much, and that'll help us in the future here. You know, besides and beyond that, for us, crop prices seem to have leveled off. You know, we've got a drought going in North Dakota, so that won't help. But we did get some rain. So, I mean, with all that being said, if we get consistent rains throughout the rest of the year here, really our situation at the end of the year should be on par with where it's been. In the past year, it's not going to be any worse, I would tell you. It shouldn't be based on what we're seeing. So that's all good stuff, really. I mean, it tells you that things have leveled. And maybe even potentially we'll start to come back out. And I think the part of it is making sure that these farmers are still being productive and getting a good crop. And that takes weather, which we can't control, but it takes all the other things that we can, like the inputs. And then from the dealer standpoint, it takes our vendors cutting their production. And you know what? You fast forward 2 years, all of a sudden, used market's pretty hot, even used older stuff, because maybe that's all you can find.
Yep. And I think you're, I think, you know, 3 years from now, if things could kind of continue on the same playing field that there are now, you will see that equipment will be, there'll probably be a kind of a gap between 12, 13, and 14 there, kind of what they're worth, because there's still so many of those out there. And then what, like the 15 and newer stuff is worth there. There'll be such a more premium because there's not as many of them. And guys that are looking at kind of making their equipment back into a normal trade cycle of every 2, 3 years, something like that, you know, trying to go find that used piece. Especially the guys that were new buyers that should have been used buyers that, because they had the cash to do so. The new stuff they bought in 12, 13, 14, 15, whatever it was when they bought it, and they're going to try to jump back in, trade it on that late model used piece. It's just not going to be there, and or as much of it anyway. And they're going to, it will be a premium, and I think that I'm excited about that when that comes back finally. But I still think we got about 3 years before we get there.
Yeah, that's probably right. Yep.
So now flip that. What are some of the negative things you see happening through 17 that you think are going to impact your business?
Well, working through some of these combines that we all have too many of, there will be some pain with that. I would tell you any of the products that we're long on right now. I mean, because if you're long on them, you've probably had a few of them for a little while. And if you've had them for a little while, you might be out of whack in the pricing. And if you're out of whack on the pricing, odds are you're going to end up into a position where you might lose money when you sell it. So I would tell you that's the negative, is there's anything that we're long on is going to be a little painful for us. And that's, it is what it is, but that's just the reality of it.
Yeah,
Aside from
we're.
that, I mean, it would be nice to see 20, 30, 40 cents on corn plus. I mean, buck, $2, whatever, that's asking a lot. But yeah, that would fix a lot of things too, but you can't really control that. I mean, the negative is the price is where it is, but that's also positive. It could be a lot worse than it is too.
Yep. And that's, we're the same way. I mean, we have stuff that we're long, and I feel from a dollars perspective in our inventory that we're in a good spot. There are certain portions of our inventory that we need to definitely pay attention to and work on and try to bring that stuff back into check. But like you said, I think there are some stuff where we're going to have some pain that we're going to have to go through to get that into a position. So, until like you said, corn comes up 40 cents to a dollar. It's going to be a struggle. And our basis down here is pretty high right now because of the carryover that we have laying around, and
Oh, yep.
the elevators are full. So, till that basis thing gets taken care of too, we're going to have some struggles with that as well. So,
No doubt, yep.
but that's definitely going to be a, it's like a cyclical thing, you know, easy come, easy go, you know, that's something that you're going to have to cover. So, one last thing, Dusty, we'll let you get back to your day, but it's coming up here in August. Looks like you're going to be participating in that Dealer Mind Summit in Omaha.
Yes, yep.
You got any, give us a little rundown of what you're going to be doing there?
Well, if I remember right, I haven't. It's in August yet here, so I've been starting to file some information together. But we're talking about how to value equipment in these times, or what we're doing to help value our equipment in the times that we're in here. Yeah, so that's the interesting side of it. It'll be that. It'll be a good discussion. And you know, from our end, it's balancing. We've got new sales managers and. You know, they're on used because we're not giving enough for trades to get their new sales out, right? So, I mean, that's a balancing act is having the conversations with them of just like we're talking. Hey, I mean, we've got to be smart of what we're putting into this. I know you want to sell your new stuff, but I've got to worry about selling this used stuff too. So I can't go crazy just to facilitate your one sale and then we trade something in that we get long on, then we end up losing more money than you made on the new sale. And it wasn't even worth it, you know? So, I mean, those are the types of things, you know, and how to talk through those and how to work around those types of problems.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to be there, so it looks like that'll be a pretty good you and actually David Gibson is going to be there with you, looks like, in your dealer panel there. So he was on a
Yeah.
previous podcast of mine, so looks like you got some good company with you.
Good. I think Don Oberle as well is in there, I believe.
Saw
From
him in
Titan,
there
I
from
think.
Titan. Yep. So there'll be some good solid folks in there. Good solid folks. So Well, we've been talking for a while, and I think everyone's got a good feel for Butler Machinery and Dusty Shoals and kind of what your philosophy is and how you guys do business. So before we check out, you have any last parting thoughts or words of wisdom you want to pass on to the rest of the world here?
Send rain up here. We need it.
Well,
That's really about it. If we can get some rain, we're gonna be okay. I mean, we got some here. We need another inch or two in a week or two, and we'll start getting more on the better side of this drought versus on the downward side of it. But we need rain. That's what we need.
Well, good deal. Well, Dusty, I appreciate you being on my podcast, and I hope to talk to you in the future. Look forward to see you in Omaha. All
No problem, sir.
right, thanks, man.
Yep, we'll see you, Casey. Bye.
That's going to do it for this edition of the Moving Iron Podcast. I'd like to give a special thank you to my guest, Dusty Shoals of Butler Machinery. I'd also like to thank everyone out there on the harvest crews working long hours to get this year's harvest in the bin. Thank you for your passion and love of farming. Remember, if you'd like to continue any of these conversations, you can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Moving Iron LLC, or you can send me an email at movingironpodcast@movingironpodcast.com. This podcast can be found on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and SoundCloud. So until next time, let's go out and move some iron. This is Casey Seymour, out.